ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It's that time of week where we do interviews, wrapping up 2019. Only one way to do that. Check him out, working as producer on the Stephen A. Smith Show. His name is Shannon Penn. What's going on, man?
Can we hurry up and get 2019 over with? Because it has not been the best for me, sir.
What's wrong, man? What's wrong?
I mean, come on. Like, I work in sports, and it's tough working in sports when it's your job and all of your teams are bad. Well, most of your teams are bad. It's been a tough 2019. Can 2020 hurry up and get here, please?
But you're lucky now because you work in a place that's got a lot of Knicks and Giants fans, so y'all can, like, commiserate.
So it's funny that you mentioned that, too, because, like, each week, Nuno Tichero, who's the producer for Will Cain, he and I get together almost on a weekly basis to discuss how bad our Giants are, so.
Hey, come on, don't forget, Main Street's no Nuno, baby. Nuno down with us.
He folk, right?
He folk. He been here. You know what I'm saying? Oh, I guess when Nuno was rolling with us, though, we ain't get to, like, put Nuno on as much.
Right.
So the streets don't know Nuno.
Yeah, but he crew though. He crew. He with us.
He crew. He absolutely with us. Yeah, man. Y'all got some sorry teams that's going on there. I gotta ask you this though, since we talking about the Giants, did it warm your heart seeing Eli get that one lad up?
Like, wasn't that the perfect way for Eli to go though? Like, he fell his way into a win, because I could have sworn, I just knowing you, Bo, each time Eli threw a pick, I was just waiting for a, what's up with your man? And I think he threw, what, 3 in that game?
He threw 3.
I was just waiting. Like, after each one, I lied to you not. I stared at my phone and looked, and I was like, all right, when is it coming?
Those weren't heartbreaking enough for me to reach out to you. I know you didn't need. Like we know what's up with your mans when we talk about Eli at that point. Let me ask you this. How many percent do you think Daniel Jones' ankle was on Sunday? Because I think it was 110%.
Oh, Jones could have played. Absolutely could have played. But the Giants knew exactly what they were doing. Yeah, let's give Eli his bon voyage. Let's send him out the right way, whether it's a win, loss, or whatever. He gets his little standing ovation from Giants fans and let him roll. I doubt he'll take another snap again this season.
Hold that 500.
Yeah. Hold that 500. Stay packed. Stay the ultimate Eli Manning, that 500 right now. He is the QB version of 8-8.
He fitty-fitty.
That's what he is.
He fitty-fitty. Yo, man, like, I actually thought that it was cool that they gave him that game, or that the opportunity was there for him to have that game and keep him moving. I legitimately thought that that was a good thing. And, like, you go tell Daniel Jones, like, hey, man, we're going to get his chance. Look, man, we playing the Dolphins. You know, it's a chance for him to get this dub, to feel good. And Daniel Jones is like, I want to play against the Dolphins. I ain't won no game in a long time neither.
Nah, but you'll have your time, because we gotta accomplish two things here. We gotta send Eli out the right way. So if we get a win, that's great. If we don't, we can stand pat trying to get this number 2 overall pick. So either way, it was a win-win for the Giants. Daniel Jones, you chill. Your time will come. You'll be able to get sacked and fumble as much as you did the previous 8 games. Don't worry, that's coming. But right now, it's Eli's time.
Yo, if they tried to trade Daniel Jones, like Josh Rosen's situation last year, what do you think they could get for him?
Oh, see, that goes even back to the draft. In my whole thought, and I'll refresh for folks who don't know, it's not that I'm against Daniel Jones. You know, that's not the case. I just felt the Giants reached for him. So if everyone, and you know, you had reports saying maybe there were 1 or 2 teams that were interested in taking Jones higher than 17, where the Giants could have taken him if they didn't get him early in the draft. I just wasn't as sold on Daniel Jones going that high. And so now it seems as though Gettleman and the Giants organization are going to try to prove to you that he's their guy. And I just don't believe the rest of the league is as high on him. So to your initial question, if they try to trade him, I think maybe at best they'll get a second round pick for Jones if they try to. And maybe we may have that situation come next year's draft if, you know, a Trevor Lawrence or someone like that declares for the draft, because then the Giants, if they're still as bad as they probably will be next year, they're gonna have a high, you know, 3 high top 5 pick. They might be in a situation, if Trevor Lawrence is available, that they might have to consider that.
Yeah, because the Cardinals got a 2 for Rosen last year when they sent him to Miami.
Right.
And that trade, I think, in a lot of ways, is a bit of a game changer. Now, for the Cardinals just being like, okay, we got it wrong, let's go get somebody else. Now, they did a whole change the offense sort of thing, bring in a new coach.
Right.
That kind of made it okay for them to do that. Gettleman leaned in way too hard on this Daniel Jones thing. Like, look, I know what I'm doing. That was his way of explaining to us that he's smarter than everybody everybody else, and he got this guy, and da-da-da, and everything else. I have not seen any cause for optimism at Daniel Jones. Have you? Like, you got reason to look for optimism.
And see, that's the problem. That's the frustration that I have with Gettleman here. If you just come out and you're sold on Jones and that's your guy, that's fine. But you are constantly trying to prove that you are the smartest guy in the room. And that's not necessary. Just run your organization. If he's a fit for your offense, if you feel as though he's the best quarterback at that position, just take him. But don't get on your high horse and make it seem like you're the only guy who felt that he was worthy of being a top 10 quarterback. Like, you're trying to sound like the smartest guy in the room. And a lot of times, if you're trying, that means you're not.
Yeah. And I wish he would have had the confidence to say, we like him more than everybody else, right? Like, go in on, I'm the smartest guy in the room, right? Go in on, nobody else sees this, but I'm the guy who does. Like, go ahead and lean in on that one. Cause look, his other two first round picks, from what I can tell, worked out okay, right? Like, Dexter Lawrence is playing well.
No, he's not. Dexter Lawrence has been fine. He's been solid his rookie year.
Oh, did the other guy get hurt?
Baker, the cornerback.
Oh, no, he's been awful.
He's been one of the worst corners in the league this year, and I understand he's a rookie. I get that. But DeAndre Baker won the Thorpe Award last year, and I know the NFL and college are different levels. I get that. But this dude won the Thorpe Award as the nation's best DB last year, and he has been awful this year. And I understand they're just throwing him out there, throwing him to the fire, letting him get his reps. I get that. But he has been bad. And I wonder, too, at some point they considered pulling him, but they couldn't because they didn't want to harm his confidence. I don't know what it was, but every time that he's been out there, the opposing quarterback is like, oh, that's the mark right there.
Yo, we
number 27.
There's nothing.
Mouse in the house. Number 27.
There is nothing worse than rooting for a team with the one corner that you 100% cannot trust. I was mixing them up with Mayock, who Mayock nailed his picks.
Yeah.
It looks like, I said that it took Farrell too early, but it looked like he nailed his picks. I was giving Gettleman a little too much credit, because I think with Jones is, hasn't he fumbled in every game?
Jones, yes, absolutely. So it's funny how, like, with Eli, it was always the interceptions. It was the picks, especially, like, the timely picks. It seems, though, with Jones, his thing is going to be the fumbles. And I don't know what you do or what you can work on in the offseason, but he's going to have to get that fixed because he's averaging a fumble a start. Like, every game, he has fumbled. And you can't go – and you cannot continue playing that way. You're in the pocket. Guys are going to come after the ball. Like, you can't – if you can't hold on to the ball, what good are you?
And now that people have realized that he's fast, because, you know, it takes people a while to realize that white dudes can be fast, I don't know how this is going to go. Like, once the word got out, like, yo, you heard?
Exactly.
He can run.
Like, he's no longer sneaky athletic,
no,
too. Like,
no.
Like, you surpassed that. Like, you used up all your sneaky athletic points in your rookie season. Like, coming into it next year, like, you're a mobile QB at this point. Daniel Jones, like, that's what he is. Because he hasn't been the most accurate. Granted, he has had some, quote unquote, dimes.
Oh,
he has. When he had time, he's had some dimes in the pocket, but he hasn't had that time. The Giants offensive line has struggled. I mean, you're paying Nate Solder on the left side a boatload of money, and he's been at best. Like, the offensive line hasn't been good, and you have a quarterback with fumbling problems. So then what do you have? So then you have essentially 13 guys in the box trying to defend Saquon Barkley, hence the tough season that he's had this year.
Are you looking forward to Dave Gettleman drafting a guard with the number 2 pick?
I wish he would. I wish you would. I swear for God, I wish you would. I'll tell you right now. Ooh.
I feel like the number 2 pick in this draft, though, is the pick that you want to be, because – you can't get it wrong.
Right.
Because Joe Burrow is going to be the number 1 pick.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, I mean, whether it's Cincinnati or anybody else, Burrow is going to be the number 1 pick. The number 2 pick is Chase Young. You don't have to do anything. You ain't got to spend no money, no resources, no nothing on scouting. I can't think of no injury that Chase Young that can have that's so severe that we're not going to take him at number 2.
Oh, no, that's without a doubt. And the Giants, they need help everywhere. Like, you cannot screw this up if you're the Giants. If you get the second pick, you don't need the first pick. We all know it's going to be borrowed to Cincinnati. You can have them. You got the number 2 pick. You cannot get this wrong. And what I mean, can't get this wrong, that means you go get Chase Young. Like,
yes.
That's the only answer to this equation. Your pass rush is lacking. Yeah, your offensive line needs help, but no, Chase Young's the answer. I don't care who does what at the combine, when, however, what, it doesn't matter. If I'm the Giants right now, I'm scouting places that you can get in Harlem where Chase Young can get his dreads done each week. Like, that's what we need to be working on right now.
Yo, the best part is you said, your pass rush is lacking. Jerry Reese is like, so what if your pass rush is lacking? Even if your pass rush wasn't lacking, Chase Young is the pick.
Without a doubt, Chase Young is the guy, and he can be the face of your defense. Like, he has the look. He's one of these first guys off the bus type guys that Gettleman seems to fall in love with. Like, he is the pick. He can, he he's played so well that he could be that transcending defensive player on the line. So I'll ask you, because this came up earlier in the week when discussing Ohio State linemen. How do you think Chase Young stacks up with the Bosa brothers and the success that they've had?
Yo, so the tricky part of this is I didn't get to see either Bosa brother play as a junior.
Wow, that's a good point.
Right, that happened with both of them, right?
Yeah, with each, both of them, trying to get me caught.
No, my bad.
See, look, just because we haven't done the show in a while, you're not going to catch me slipping.
I wasn't even trying to do that.
Look, 2019 hasn't been the best year for me, but I'm still on my game.
My bad.
Not for 1 second. Gabe, you trying to get me, Gabe. You see that?
Damn. Mm-mm. Yeah, you think I do you like that?
Each of the Bosa brothers.
You think I do you like that?
Each of the Bosa brothers.
Because I would. I just went right there.
Each of the Bosa brothers.
Yes, each Bosa.
Were hurt and or suspended at some point during their junior year.
Yeah, I just didn't feel like doing it, right?
Well, that whole thing there, too.
Yeah. So I don't know. Like, he appears to be really good. Joey, I think, is better than Nick. And Joey seems to be, like, stronger. You know, like,
bigger, too. He's a little taller, yeah.
Right, not that Nick is not strong, but he seems to be. Chase Young, I can't tell how much of that is strength. I can't tell how much of that is speed, because whoever I've seen on the other side of him has had no chance of blocking him. None whatsoever.
Just ask Wisconsin.
Oh, my God, that was the one where I was just like, yo, y'all can't get that dude no help?
Like, get a tight end, an extra running back, somebody over there to chip him. Hey, go six offensive linemen if you got
you. That's what I was about to say. Forget a tight end. You need to bring somebody who need to tell the judge that he eligible, right? Like, somebody with a number in the 60s or 70s.
Like, I don't care if it's third and long. You go jumbo package.
Yes.
It doesn't matter. Shotgun or not, we going jumbo.
No, man. So, if you're the Giants and you wind up with that number two pick and you get that dude, you can't mess this up. So how is Gettleman going to mess this up?
Because you're going to draft a guard in the first round. That's the only way. Like, yes, I mentioned the Giants do have needs at defensive line, offensive line, shoring that up. But with a star like Chase Young, and he appears to be a can't miss, you got to take. You can't fumble the bag on this one. And to go back to initial point that you had, though, like, what do the Giants do here the long term with Daniel Jones, though? Like, I understand he's the guy, and that's Gettleman's guy. But you and I have had conversations with Trevor Lawrence, and how good can Trevor Lawrence be, and what conundrum are the Giants going to have in next year's draft if Lawrence declares and you're in a spot where you're eligible to take him?
Ain't no conundrum to me. Forget your pride, forget everything else. You take Trevor Lawrence. Because, look, no matter how bad you might look because you took a quarterback a couple years ago and it didn't work out, Trevor Lawrence fixes that.
But I think in order for that to happen, the Giants will have another executive in that position.
Yeah.
I don't think Gettleman and his pride and what we've seen and his chest out and all in he is on Jones, I don't think he would take and acknowledge that you have another prospect. Because he pushed all of his chips in for Jones, I don't think Gettleman would take Lawrence over Jones.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Then that means he just has to get fired.
Exactly. That's where I'm going.
Yeah, like you walk in, it's not a if we fire Gettleman, we take Trevor Lawrence. It is we're taking Trevor Lawrence. Get on and get gone, Dave. You pick.
All right, so you asked me if we're looking down the road a bit, but if you have the opportunity to draft the Trevor Lawrence, so that means you're moving Daniel Jones, and the entire world knows you're moving Daniel Jones. What if you're the Giants? What can you get for Daniel Jones?
I think by that time, maybe a 3 or 4.
Ooh,
and you know what? That's fine. Whatever. Yo, first round picks don't work out all the time. All the time. Right? Like this. This is a common thing that first round picks do not work out. We'll be all right. If we got Trevor Lawrence, we'll be all right. We'll work this out. And it's actually made me think about something that's in the news, right? You and I have talked about this with Gettleman, because Gettleman used to coach, he'd be the GM with the Panthers.
Right.
You know what I mean? We know that in North Carolina a little bit. Hey, man, I used to think that I had never heard of a general manager who was more disliked by the guys who played for him than Dave Gettleman. Until 2 days ago.
Speaking of the Giants, right?
Tom Coughlin. Yo, he's the worst.
Whatever he was doing, it can't be this. Like, I know there are countless examples, but whatever it was in that situation, it can't be this.
They tried to fine this dude $700,000 and had to give it all back. Like, the thing about Coughlin and these fines and these stories, he wasn't given like these kangaroo court fines. He fined Leonard Fournette $100,000 for sitting on the bench during a game when he was inactive.
Like, wouldn't you want your guy to be on the bench if he's inactive? Because at least if he's one of your captains, one of your stars, he's there. He's there in person helping out, like, rah-rah, the whole team thing. Wouldn't you want that?
Yo,
like, we acknowledge if you can't go, but at least you're here with us.
100 G's for it, though. Like, of all things, 100 G's. And these dudes have been fighting it, and they've been getting the money back. And for the Players Association, they basically put Tom Coughlin's face on the cash register and said, do not accept checks from this man. And they're like, yo, you might want to think about this before you go mess with them.
Yeah, I'm going to need you to wait until the third before you cash that.
Yo, dude. He alienated Jalen Ramsey.
Right.
He alienated Fournette, who, by the way, this year has been better than I ever thought Fournette could be in the NFL. Like, he has beasted. The dude, Ngoa, is that how you say his last name? The defensive end?
Yeah.
Hadn't signed him to a deal when it seems pretty obvious that that's a dude you need to give a deal. Dante Fowler, it looks okay with him in Los Angeles now. Have you noticed that?
It's funny how that works where, you know, the Jags were saying it was all of these guys. It was Ramsey. He was a problem. And Fowler. He was a problem. But no. Coughlin was the problem the whole time. And you saw, I think there were a couple of tweets from Jalen Ramsey earlier this week.
Tried to tell y'all.
Like, essentially, he was the proverbial Kermit sipping the tea.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
I tried to tell y'all. Don't believe me, just watch. Yep.
And I am going to say this again because I've said it many times. I said it on Twitter and people tripped. And I don't think they fully understood me, but I'm going to say this again. Tom Coughlin might have cost the Jaguars a Super Bowl for the 2017 season because they stuck with Blake Bortles and he did not bother to call Colin Kaepernick because he absolutely refused to do so and got in front of everybody and said that he refused to do so. And people were like hitting me and they were like, oh, Blake isn't why they lost that AFC championship game. Well, consider this. If Kaepernick had been your quarterback, you might have been playing that AFC championship game in Jacksonville instead of playing it in New England. That's number one. Number two, Shannon, do you remember the second half of that game?
The one against the Patriots,
yes.
Right? I know the Jags didn't do much in that game.
Remember, they were up early, right?
They were up early, but then in the second half, it just, like, the bottom dropped.
Right, and the big complaint that people had was, aside from the Miles Jack should have been a fumble play, was that the offense went conservative. Why do you think the offense went conservative? Because they were petrified of their quarterback. Like, they had a quarterback they could not trust to do anything. And you can say whatever it is that you want about Colin Kaepernick. Colin Kaepernick has something on his resume that you cannot take away from him, which is a documented track record of not just postseason success, but postseason excellence. We have seen Colin Kaepernick have some of the best postseason games that we have ever seen. You remember that game, the first one against Green Bay?
In San Francisco.
Where he had 180 yards rushing before contact?
Well, apparently Green Bay didn't know that Kaepernick could run.
Yes. Oh, he destroyed them three times. Because remember, they played the first game of the year the next year against them, and he destroyed them. And then, as the starter, Kaepernick was there when the 49ers won at Lambeau. Remember, they had the comeback. They were down, what, 21-3 in the first half to the Falcons in the NFC Championship game that year, and the 49ers came back. Kaepernick, as a starting quarterback, has won a game in Foxborough as the starter, which very few people have been able to say over the course of the last 10 or 15 years. And they went out there with Blake Bortles because they didn't even call Kaepernick. Like, you ain't even have to call Kaepernick and then be like, hey, man, you're the starter now. You bring him in so that sorry Blake Bortles got somebody behind him,
right,
who has been good, who has been a quarterback of winning teams. They were that close to making a Super Bowl that year. You telling me that upgrading quarterback couldn't have got them there?
Right, because they had all the pieces. They had a dominant defense that year. They had Fournette in the running game was working. Yes, they had some injuries at the wideout, but the problem there, as you mentioned, was Blake Bortles. You're not winning postseason games if you're afraid that your quarterback's going to lose the game for you.
Yep.
What are you doing?
Yep.
You're not going to win, and don't think that the other players on the team don't pick up on that as well.
Yep.
Like, the Jags knew once they went super conservative in that second half of that day game that we have no confidence that Blake Bortles is going to go out there and win us this game.
Mm-mm.
And they knew it.
It's worse than we have no confidence he's going to win it for us. We think he's going to lose it for us. right? Because if he was simply just not going to win it for you, that would have been fine. You had a lead. They thought that dude was going to lose it for him. And guess what? I did too. I was right there. I was right there. Nah, man, that dude is sorry. And that is, to me, it is malpractice to willingly go into a season with a sorry quarterback and then give him an extension. You remember that?
Oh, yeah. They doubled down. Like, they thought, I don't know what, they thought it was an aberration or something. They doubled down on it. Like, nah, he'll be better next year. No.
And then Coughlin gave $50 guaranteed million to Nick Foles, only to wind up with their delightful rookie that they got in the sixth round being the starter.
Oh, yeah, nah. Aside from all the extra stuff, Coughlin had to go. Like, if you look at just the product that he put out on the field, aside from all the extra stuff, he wasn't getting the job done.
No.
Like, if you want to talk about malpractice, the team that Coughlin was putting out there, not to mention the culture, that was the malpractice.
Yo, and you want to know who I feel bad for in this? Something I didn't really think I'd ever say?
Mm-hmm.
Doug Marrone. Yo, and here's why I say that, right? And I don't really know that much about Doug Marrone. However, can you imagine, like, okay, so you've worked a job where you've worked in a managerial position, right?
Right.
Okay. So imagine you trying to establish a relationship with the people that's under you, but the GM is up here treating everybody bad. And now, so these folks don't really want to grind for you because they mad at the dude above you. Does that not sound like Doug Marrone every day?
Absolutely.
And Doug Marrone don't like Coughlin either.
But see, that's what happens when you're in middle management, though. It's like, man, I don't really agree either, but we can look, this is what he want to do, so this is what we're going to do.
Look, man, I just work here. You know, like he's got Coughlin all up in his business because Coughlin ultimately wants to be the coach. That was the other part of this, too. I felt like Coughlin was finding dudes like a coach would find dudes. Like the level of things that he was on. I just didn't feel like the general manager would be the one that was making these finds. And like, and I'll take it to another level. And let me tell you, I want to know what you think about this, right? We always hear people talk about the thing where the players make all this money and the resentment that folks have for the players and that the players got too much power because of all the money they make, right? This is not an uncommon thing for you to hear. Is that Tom Coughlin and them fines his way of trying to equalize and let them know, yeah, you got all that money, but I can take that money back?
Oh, yeah, he absolutely was trying to show his dominance. Like, hey, I'm still in charge. Your name may be on the marquee, your face may be on the billboards, but I'm still in charge. And that's essentially how Coughlin ran it in New York.
But what's funny about New York is the Giants did not let him run the front office.
But that was different too because the Giants are a different brand. Like the Giants were at a place where they can, we're the Giants. Like, yes, you're not the Cowboys, we're the Giants. The Jags and that franchise, they don't have that same pull. So if we're bringing you in here to be the savior, to be the guy to run it all, we have to abide by, we meaning the organization, have to abide by whatever the rules you want to do. Because we're the Jacksonville Jaguars. Yeah.
And he meant something different down there because of his track record.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. Like, with the Giants, like, you just the coach. Like, yeah, you won us two Super Bowls, but you just the coach.
And look, that saved them. And, I mean, we have to never forget, man. Them dudes was about, that year they won the Super Bowl. That's when Coughlin had to loosen up a little bit. Remember that?
Yeah, absolutely. on the rules and the timing stuff. And, you know, cause he had beef with guys like Michael Strahan. They let him know, like, hey, you gotta change this or you're gonna be out of here, buddy.
He's like, yo, we're not here for this, dog. like, it's 50 us.
And which makes that's what makes this Jacksonville bringing him even more amazing because Coughlin being so old school and now, you know, today's, you know, athletes and what has to be, the conversations that organizations have to have with them, it's more transparency now than ever. And that didn't seem like that was Coughlin's way. So that's what, even bringing him in, and like you mentioned, yes, he meant something different to that organization, first coach, AFC championship game, all of that stuff. But Coughlin's old school, and I just don't see, quote unquote, old school working nowadays.
And you know what? I want to make sure we don't disrespect the old school, right? Cause it's old school cats that wouldn't be acting like this.
Oh yeah, not old school. Yeah. I'm not,
oh yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. like Bill Belichick, old school. But he ain't out here acting like, I mean,
But Belichick's old school, but Belichick recognizes game.
Yes.
Belichick is always recognizes game. We always give Belichick credit because he recognizes what the other team does well on offense and takes that away. No, what Belichick was able to do was recognize what works for my players and I'm going to make them excel.
Yep.
On and off the field.
Yep.
Think about it. As much turnover as they had in New England, I can't think of too many players that have had bad stuff to say about Belichick himself.
No.
Think about that.
That's a great point.
Think about it. He's been there. He's been a head coach almost 20 years now. now, and all the former players, they talk glowingly about him.
I have never heard one person that played for him publicly say something bad about him.
No.
I've never thought about that.
Because Belichick, old school as he is, Belichick recognizes game.
Well, Belichick is also, like, it's very clear what the deal is. Get all to get gold, right? Like, there's no gray areas on this. Get it done, or you up out of here.
Right, piss or get off the pot. One of the two.
And he's like, yo, and if you do this right, one day you could be Gerard Mayo. I got Gerard Mayo over here on the coaching staff. Gerard Mayo, what, like 34?
Hey, yeah, Mayo, yeah. He's in his early 30s, yeah.
He's like, look, man.
And essentially co-defensive player with Belichick's son.
Yep.
With the haircut.
Or lack thereof.
Well, that too.
Yeah, show some pride. Show some pride. But, wow, that is such a great point. And Coughlin, whole team hates you. Whole team just like, nah, we ain't gone. We ain't about to do this.
I wonder how would that have played if Coughlin was the head coach, though? Because at least, like, if he was the coach, maybe that'll rally or galvanize the guys.
No.
But it doesn't work that way when it's the GM. Because you as a player, you can't directly affect what the GM is doing. I think it works a little different when you're in those practices if he was the head man, if he was the head coach.
I think if he was the coach, he would have got fired right away. Because if he was the coach, the Cats would have had to put their feet down much sooner.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. The players would have had a more direct line to Coughlin, yeah. And they can voice their displeasure with him to someone higher up. But because Coughlin was the man in charge,
right.
they had to go through Marone or whatever. Like, there were different channels. Like, they couldn't directly affect what Coughlin was doing or the future that the organization would have with Coughlin.
Yeah, I also think that Shad Khan had to learn something because he bought that team, as I recall, like, not long after or like right around the lockout.
Mm-hmm.
All right. But I remember seeing an interview with him or somebody had done some interview with him where he was talking about like labor stuff. And basically, because he owns like an auto parts store. Like that's one of the ways he made a lot of money was through this auto parts store. And one of the things he had done in charge of that auto parts store is he had basically broken the union. And he was like, look, you know, had problems with those folks. I won there. And, you know, I'll be fine if it comes up over here. And I think that the PA sending out that letter was a lesson for him in the power dynamics of this new business. Where, look, football players are not as powerful as basketball or baseball right. players, but they are more powerful than the people working at them auto parts stores.
All those wrestlers are part of AEW, the wrestling organization that you bankrolling right now.
Oh, he's on that?
Yeah, AEW. That's Khan and his son. They're bankrolling that. So
that's the Cody Rhodes joint, right?
Yes, sir.
Oh yeah, no. This ain't no. Football players, they got a little more clout. they don't have to put up with this stuff. And the idea, imagine this, that you're looking at your roster and you're like, yo, we need to get better players. And the Players Association just said, don't go play for them. Oh yeah, we got to fix it. So now next year, think about this. I think next year they are going to have a different general manager, a different president of football ops, a different head coach, and a different quarterback.
Well, they got their guy, right? Isn't Garner Minshew, like, isn't that the thing? Isn't that the jam? Isn't he their guy now?
I think they have a guy. And I don't think he's bad. I want to be clear. I think they have a guy. But I think he's a guy in such a way that you should try to get a quarterback in the first round this year if you can get one. And if Minshew turns out to be that dude, then that other quarterback is your Phillip Rivers. Like, you got one of them in on a six-round contract. You can go ahead and do that. Hey, speaking of Phillip Rivers, man, so we need to explain this to people who do not know this. So Shannon and I met. We used to do radio in Raleigh. Can you explain what a big deal Phillip Rivers is to the state fan?
Oh my gosh. Like, yeah, the Russell Wilson thing was cute and, you know, a whole pack of Badgers won the Super Bowl. That's all well and good. That ain't got nothing on Phillip Rivers, though.
Nah, man. Phillip is their guy. And I know some of y'all are like, yeah, I bet he is. Nah, it's something different, though. Like, it's hard to explain exactly like what the relationship is
right.
between Phillip Rivers and that school. And also, to be fair, Phillip Rivers is a more publicly genuine person. You're going to be attached to Phillip Rivers in a way that you're not going to be attached to Russell Wilson, because Russell Wilson is the guy who says whole pack of Badgers.
Right, exactly.
You know, like, Phillip Rivers is not that dude. You remember how much they used to play Chargers games on TV?
Right, like they played Chargers and rather like they were a local team or something. Like, yeah, you would have the Panthers on, but the Chargers, like if it was a CBS game, AFC, oh, you're getting the Chargers.
Yo, so Phillip Rivers stinks now.
Yeah.
I don't know if you noticed this.
Yeah.
But I had a thought.
Okay.
I wanted to bounce off you about Phillip Rivers. It really just hit me the other day and it hadn't come up anywhere else. You know, we don't talk enough about the fact that the Chargers stuck with the wrong quarterback.
You think?
Think about this. We all understood it when they drafted Phillip Rivers, because Drew Brees in his first 3 years was just not good, right?
Mm-hmm.
We all understood when they took Phillip Rivers. We all understood when they let Drew Brees go. Like, they kept him, he balled out, they franchise tagged him,
right?
And then they let him go when he had the shoulder injury, right? Now, Drew Brees is a better quarterback than Phillip Rivers.
Yes, yeah.
At pretty much every step of their careers, Drew Brees has been better than Phillip Rivers. I'm not even sure if there's been a single season in the league where we could say that Phillip Rivers is better than Drew Brees. Drew Brees is going to walk into the Hall of Fame. Drew Brees has thrown more touchdown passes than any quarterback in the history of the NFL. He is that dude. And Phillip Rivers is a very, very good quarterback.
Look, I'm glad you clarified when you said kept the wrong guy, because at first I thought you were talking about Eli and Phillip Rivers.
Oh, no, 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 no. Oh, no, 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 oh, no, no. They kept the right guy. My bad. My bad. Sorry about that.
but yeah.
That explains why you reacted
right,
that way.
Right. Like, wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Wait, what?
Phil in New York? Wait a minute.
But no, nobody, like, somehow that doesn't ever come up. Like, it was an understandable move that they made.
Right.
But they kept the wrong guy.
And now, like moving forward, like I'm surprised, and I've brought this up before with Rivers. Like, I'm surprised. You look at the other quarterbacks of the 04 draft or around that time, and for the most part, you see teams drafting the heir apparent or a young quarterback that they can groom. You saw it happen in Philadelphia with Roethlisberger and Rudolph. Whether Rudolph can actually be the guy, we'll right. see. You obviously, it's happening with Daniel Jones and Eli in the 04 draft. But with Roethlisberger, the Chargers have never done that. Like, they always just bring in the veteran guy to be the backup. Like, Phillip Rivers, like, it's time, Chargers, for you draft the heir apparent. Like,
they know. But keep in mind that they were floating stories about maybe benching Phillip Rivers or Tyrod
right.
Taylor.
Well, yeah, but yeah, the floating, but I need to see it. Like,
oh, yeah.
I need to see it in your actions.
All I'm saying, while I agree with you, all I'm saying is, if a team is willing to float the idea of starting their Tyrod Taylor over their Phillip Rivers, can you imagine how frustrated that means they are with Phillip Rivers?
Oh, it's time.
Right?
It's time.
Do you know how risky it is to even make people think you might do this?
It's time. It's time.
Right? Like, if you're Anthony Lynn, no less.
Oh, it's time.
And
I'm sure they'll send Rivers out but here's the interesting thing with Rivers. Like, if he parted ways with the Chargers, I don't see Rivers retiring. I don't see Rivers retiring. Like he's one of those guys where the arm talent may still be there. I don't know if he was on a better team. I don't see him like as feisty as Rivers is. Like, I can see him trying to prove a point to go out and go to another team and prove that he's still got something left.
Yeah,
like, with Eli, I don't really see that fight. Like, now that Coughlin's gone, he ain't going to Jacksonville. Like, I can see Eli riding off to the sunset retirement. Like, with Phillip, I can still see that fire. Maybe that's just wrong. Maybe that's it's a misconception because he plays with so much fire and passion when he plays. But I can see Phillip trying to prove that the Chargers were wrong.
Well, the other thing, too, Eli's only got a couple of kids. Phillip Rivers got a whole side over there. How excited would you be about having to finally come here and pull your weight with all these damn kids?
Like, he got not just a side, he got the whole sideline.
Yeah.
It ain't like an NFL sideline. He got a college sideline. He got red shirts, gray shirts, everybody over there.
Three of those kids are walk-ons. Yo, he ain't trying to go back to that. Like, would anybody side him? Because we talked about this on the pod the other day. I think this is Tom Brady's last year.
Really?
Yeah. It's a wrap. It's a wrap. And I don't know if he knows it's a wrap, but I think that Bill Belichick knows that it's a wrap. He doesn't have a contract for next year.
Right.
I mean, I think that this is going to be it for Tom Brady. Like, somebody made the point that maybe, you know, Stephen Ross, the Michigan guy, that maybe he goes down there to Miami to play, you know, his last year. And I'm like, wow, that would be a great way for the Dolphins to tank. Like, that would be the smoothest tank job anybody's ever pulled off. But I think he's going to be gone. Drew Brees doesn't have much left. Like, if the Saints were to win the Super Bowl this year, I think Drew Brees would leave. But I don't I think he's been really overrated this year, to be honest, because he can't get the ball down the field for nothing. That 29 for 30 was for 307 yards.
Yeah, but see, my thing with Brady, like every time that we start, you know, bringing up the washed and it's time conversations with Brady, you look up and oh, he's in another Super Bowl.
Yeah,
like, it just happened. It always seems that like I'm waiting until. I'm not going to believe it's going to happen until it happens. Because every time we do it, he finds a way, they find a way to play in a Super Bowl.
I'm with you, but we ain't really been talking about that this late. Like, normally, think about this. Normally, this is when the Patriots have been like, okay, we spent the first few weeks just figuring out what to do with y'all.
Right.
And now we about to just put this into gear. No, man, that's not what we got here. Like, I really, really, really do think this is done. If for no other reason, then even if he ain't done, he done taking hits. Like, if you notice this, Tom Brady's in that pocket. Like, okay, I didn't get open fast enough. I'm throwing this straight to the ground.
Right.
He is not taking a single unnecessary hit, and you can't win with your quarterback playing like that.
And I think something that's interesting that we typically don't have with the Patriots, especially this late in the season, there's a good chance that the Patriots may not have home field in the playoffs. Like, you got Buffalo and New England playing this weekend. Like, when's the last time you even thought that New England wasn't going to win the AFC East?
Let me ask you a question about this Buffalo and New England game. How many points you think Buffalo gonna score?
Well, that's not the point. That's not the point. Don't let facts get in the way of a good narrative.
Oh yeah, no. You're right. Like, at least I understand the idea. It is a plausible thought
right. That
Buffalo could win this game. I'm just asking. Like, I don't know how many points the Patriots are gonna score on Buffalo, but we are giving Bill Belichick a week to figure out what to do against Josh Allen.
Right. Right.
Yo.
Like Stephon Gilmore might score more touchdowns than the Bills wideout.
Woo! I think that Josh Allen, between fumbles and interceptions, not necessarily lost fumbles, right? But between fumbles and interceptions,
mm-hmm.
If I set the number at 3, you going over or under?
Ooh, that's a solid number. I may have to take the over.
I'm thinking it's the over.
I may have to take the over. And it's in New England, too?
Yeah.
I may have to take the over.
I'm thinking it's the over.
But even with that, at least we're here. Like, this is uncharted territory, really.
Right.
Like, this late in the season for the Patriots to still be playing for their division. Like, this is different.
Okay, so the Patriots' record now is what, 11-3?
11-3, Buffalo 10-4.
Okay, and the Chiefs are 10-4.
Yes.
Okay, so if I'm the Patriots, my concern is really, I mean, so if they lose to Buffalo, Buffalo wins that division, and then I think the Chiefs get home field.
Yeah.
Cause that's the
Chiefs
one.
Win the West.
That's the Chiefs are probably even, I'm still leaning probably right now to the Chiefs winning the AFC over the Ravens.
And why is that?
Well, I mean, I did see them play this year, and it was a while ago, but the Chiefs did win that one.
Yeah.
And,
but is that more about the Chiefs, or are there still questions that you have about Baltimore?
So the thing with Baltimore is, as great as Jackson has been, I still think he is a good to very good passer and not a great passer. I don't know how it is that you make make Baltimore throw the ball more than they want to. But if that circumstance is to arise, I can see that being a bit problematic there for the Ravens. The flip side of that is the Chiefs have a bad run defense.
Right.
Which is not bode well. But I'll ask you this. As good as Lamar has been this year and as good as that offense has mm-hmm. been this year, who do you think is the best quarterback in the NFL?
Oh, Patrick Mahomes.
There we go. Right.
Like, even with that, and this is not a knock on Lamar. He's an outstanding season, but Patrick Mahomes still passing, running, doing what Mahomes does. I'll take that. 8 days out of the week. Like, I'll take that every day.
And is there a more unstoppable player than Tyreek Hill? Because the only way that you can stop Tyreek Hill is by running faster than him. And I just don't know if there's anybody who can do that other than Lamar Jackson.
That ain't happening. I'm sorry. That ain't happening. Lamar's fast. That ain't happening. You ain't outrunning Tyreek. Oh, you ain't catching him. Oh, no. Like they say when he's out, you ain't catching the crackhead. Like, that's like, you ain't, that ain't happening.
He's so fast. So, like, I lean Chiefs. I mean, there's not a knock on the Ravens
right here.
I lean Chiefs, because I do think that what can happen in a season like this, like it's happening with Jackson now, is there have been legitimate criticisms to make of him, right? Like, when he was coming out of college, the questions about his accuracy, those were legitimate questions to ask about him as he came out. The performance that he put up in the first three quarters of the playoff game last year, There was legitimate reason to question him at that point. The problem is that people go so hard one direction or another, mm-hmm. right? Largely based on personal agenda, where they jump all the way to he's the best they have, I've ever seen, or all the way over to this dude can't even be a quarterback, and there's no room on the in-between on these. But you go look at this in these games lately, man. I mean, it's been a handful of these 150-yard passing games. You know, and the offense has been balling, don't get me wrong, so I don't want to pretend as though they can't do it that way. But I will say it doesn't seem like this is an offense that is inconquerable, except for the fact that they just press a numbers advantage and he's so much faster than everybody else. The numbers never seem to be on your side.
Well, if you look at, yes, the offense has played great this year. But if you look at potential teams that they can face in the playoffs, like what defenses out there do you think can realistically stop them? Like New Orleans defense has played well this year, but what defenses in the AFC do you think would have a shot at really stopping or slowing down this offense? And when I mean offense, the run game, yeah. Ingram's had a great year, the tight ends get involved. What defense do you think do you see can actually slow them down?
Well, the Patriots in some ways did, but the Patriots can't score.
Right. Right. So like
Buffalo?
Even with that, like what team what defense, when we already had the question about Buffalo's
right.
consistently
right.
on offense. So, yeah, you may get a stellar defensive team, but what team, New England, Buffalo, whomever, can then put up the points on the Ravens' offense? Like, I don't see a team that's going to be able to do both. Like,
that's
yes, Kansas
point.
City has an outstanding offense, but as you mentioned, they struggle to run defense, and running is what Baltimore does. So I don't know if there's a team in the AFC that's going to be able to do both.
That's
like,
a good
you may
point.
Stop one, but you might not be able to score on them.
That's a good point, because, yo, I mentioned Buffalo, except we just saw that.
Right.
And they pants Josh Allen. They said, we're going to leave people open.
Right.
You ain't gonna do nothing. That basically, their whole strategy, this is the play they called on Josh Allen. You ain't about to do that's the play they called the whole time. Right there. He's standing right there. You ain't about to do
like, that's like in basketball and you playing D and you have no confidence that the guy can hit a jumper. I'll give you that all day.
Yep.
Let me step back. Let me put my hands down. You got it.
Self-check.
You got it. Self-check.
Self-check. Self-check. Hey, put that dude on self-check. And I still wind up with these people swearing to me in the greatness of, whatchamacallit, of Josh Allen. And I'm just like, yo, stop doing this to him. I don't want to knock him. He's right. Obviously trying hard. People seem to like him. You know, he's a great athlete.
Uh-huh. Right. He's another one of those athletic quarterbacks.
Oh, yeah.
Him, Daniel Jones, Mitch Trubisky, these athletic quarterbacks.
It's a whole new breed. They redefined what quarterback it looks like.
See how that happens? It only took 100 years of the NFL.
Hey, man, get ready. I talked about this a little bit, but get ready for this. They go start hyping up a whole lot of these quarterbacks, man. A whole lot. Look at the numbers game, man.
Well, speaking of young quarterbacks, and we mentioned Joe Burrow earlier, and he's probably going to be the first overall pick in the draft, and that going to the Bengals, and that's great. Throwing out a scenario to you, if Trevor Lawrence, and who you know I'm very high on, if Trevor Lawrence was available for the draft this year, would you take Lawrence over Burrow?
Probably, yes. One thing we got to remember about Joe Burrow is that Joe Burrow is a fifth-year senior.
Right. Joe Burrow's older than Lamar Jackson.
Yeah. Yeah, they're the same recruiting class. Trevor Lawrence, like, we're still seeing where this is going to go.
Mm-hmm. Any concerns about the height at all?
Because he's 6'6".
Yeah, being too tall.
Yeah, that's the only thing that gets me. That's the only one. And I don't have a great explanation for why it is that these 6'6 guys aren't, you know, never get it done. But that would be the one if there was something to point to.
Not to mention, too, with Lawrence and looking at his wideouts. I mean, both of his wideouts are what, 6'4", 6'5"?
Ooh, they're good. Like right. This is part of the thing with Baker Mayfield as we look at him coming out of Oklahoma. And this is also part of it, what I look at with Tua Tagovailoa.
Mm-hmm.
Yo, your dudes are always open.
Yeah, right. Like, how often are you fitting the ball in these tight windows?
Yeah, I'm not blaming these guys for these guys always being open, but Matt Leinart was another example of that. Like, your dudes are always open. I don't know exactly how much of this is about you, right? I don't know how much of this is masking whatever weakness it is that you might have, because these dudes are always open. Like, Jalen Hurts is a problem for Oklahoma, and he is a step down from the guys that they have had as a passer.
Right.
But those dudes are still butt-naked open over there at Oklahoma.
Right, DeeDee Lamb, right. CeeDee Lamb, excuse me. Yeah. CeeDee Lamb, yeah.
Yeah, like I've watched those games, man. Them dudes are still, like, for Jalen Hurts to be able to put up the numbers passing that he put up at Oklahoma requires people being really, really open. Right. And with Mayfield, the thing was, Mayfield had this great accuracy. So, like, even though the dudes were open, you could see what it was that he had. But what's happened with Mayfield in the league, like, I think you may have seen this when he gave that quote about why Odell doesn't get the ball more. He's like, I guess you guys just thought he was going to be in one-on-one all the time. And it's like, yo, Baker, the guys aren't going to be that open in the NFL.
Right.
Right? Like Odell being double covered does not mean don't throw to him. That's not how that works at this level.
He was double covered his entire career with the Giants. Like, yes. How many one-on-ones do you think Odell was really getting over there?
Right. That's what I'm saying. And so, that part with guys like Lawrence, Jameis Winston, his first year at Florida State, part of why he looked so good, them dudes was wide open. And it never looked again for Jameis like it did that first year when he was there. Cause them guys was just wide open. He didn't have to take none of these chances that he's been taking every year since then. And so, yeah, no, like Burrow, I think Burrow's good. I don't know, like, how great of an arm Burrow has. Right. I think he moves in the pocket really well, and that's going to be the thing that really gets him done. He seems to be a likable fellow.
Athletic quarterback.
He is an athletic quarterback. Apparently an all-state point guard.
Athletic quarterback, trying to tell you.
Yeah, and he's putting on for the Nappy Roots type folks.
Mm-hmm.
He got at the Heisman and was like, yo, all my life been Poe, but it really don't matter no more. I don't know if he been Poe, but he shouted out to all the Poe folks up there. You don't see that very often from a cat like Joe Burrow. Now, maybe that's how he's breaking the mold.
And not to mention too, with Burrow and this whole thing that's been so fascinating, interesting to watch this year with LSU, the fact that we have this quarterback in an LSU offense, just imagine what these LSU teams could have been in the past if they would have had a passer, a quarterback as good as Burrow. Like, all the weapons that they had on the outside year in and year out that were wasted.
I think the argument goes in a different direction. Because keeping in mind that Burrow couldn't beat out Dwayne Haskins, and while Dwayne Haskins was very good at Ohio State, if there's something I will say that Dave Gettleman was right on, I think he was right that Dwayne Haskins was not a quarterback to take in the first round.
Or at least as high as Jones would have went.
Yeah, exactly. No. I get where he may have been coming from there. But the thing about LSU quarterbacks was, those guys were highly regarded before they got to LSU. The mm-hmm. problem was Les Miles.
Yeah, how many Heismans was Parolo supposed to win?
Oh, man. And to be fair, he never won the job because he kept doing that guy.
Mm-hmm.
That guy. So Parolo, Jordan Jefferson, people forget, like, Jordan Jefferson was a 4-star recruit.
Right.
Zach Menberger was a 5-star recruit, and he was pretty good.
Russell Shepard.
Right, Russell Shepard, yeah. They didn't have to tell that boy he was going to play quarterback. They knew damn well he wouldn't go play no quarterback for LSU.
He graduated early, too.
Yeah.
Get extra time in. I'll get some spring practice in, some reps in the spring QB.
Yeah, Texas told him, like, yeah, you're going to be playing wide receiver, buddy. Right? They LSU was like, yeah, whatever you say, buddy. Yeah, wide receiver. Yeah, sounds great. But they've had quarterback talent there. They just didn't do anything. Anthony Jennings, Brandon, what's his name?
The one who transferred to Carolina.
Yeah. But all those guys were highly regarded.
They were.
And so I think they look at it and they like, what if LSU had Joe Brady when I was there?
It's so much fun watching them now, though. Like, it's different because they've always had, for the most part, good running game and solid defense, and they had weapons on the outside. But to see now that finally have a quarterback that's able to put it all together, like, it's been fun. And obviously, like, Ogeron, like, I'm a big Ogeron fan. Like, that, like, watching him on the sidelines and aside from just the way he speaks, but just the energy, the passion, like, all, like, that's fun. Like, that's fun for the college game to watch this whole thing with LSU. And as you and I have talked about in the past, it's not like LSU has this big, deep history like some of these other programs. Like, a lot of this is still new.
Here's the thing. They're going to beat Oklahoma, and then they're going to lose to whoever wins out of Ohio State and Clemson. Clemson scores 75 points on LSU.
Well, speaking of that, well, who do you like in that LSU, Ohio State-Clemson game in that semifinal? Who do you like?
Yo, I got to be honest. I stopped watching Clemson a long time ago. How about you? When's the last time you watched the Clemson
game? Look, you and the rest of America.
Yo, that's the problem. Look, they kept playing all the ACC games.
Look, this season I also produced a college game day on ESPN Radio with Matt, Trevor, and Brad. And each week in and week out, when we would have our show meetings, like, the question was, All right, when are we going to start talking about Clemson? If you paid attention to Clemson, will this loss drop Clemson out of the playoffs? Because it's like you forgot. Like, they went away.
Yeah.
Like, it was like this was a redshirt year for Clemson. Like, you knew they were on the team. They were playing, but we're not watching them. We'll see you in the playoffs.
But they got to destroying people. I didn't have to see it to know that, right? They got to destroying people. So I lean Ohio State. I've watched a lot more of Ohio State, uh-huh. So I lean there. But I here's the thing that does worry me about Ohio State, man. Justin Fields got a way to go throwing the ball.
He does.
And so with all that talent that they got over there on that defense, whoo boy. Like, this is going to be the biggest game Fields ever had in his life, obviously. So, like, I guess I lean Clemson there. And, oh, man, Clemson going to win this again.
Yeah, they probably are.
But I tell you who I know ain't going to win it.
I got a feeling I know where this is going. Mm-hmm.
Who I'm going to say?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Who I'm going to say?
Go ahead.
Who I'm going to say?
The Knicks.
Yes, that was exactly what I was going to say.
Oh, man. I knew it. You set it up. Well, I know who ain't going to win. I know exactly where that was coming.
So let me run something by you.
Uh-huh.
I need to find an NBA team to root for.
Oh, okay.
I feel like I need to get back to that level of involvement.
Uh-huh. Well, I know who it ain't going to be. See, I can do it too.
No, I wasn't going to do that. I was kind of thinking about it. I kind of admire you Knicks fans. I kind of admire that y'all truly love these cats.
The stick-to-itiveness that we have for this
all
this
of
crappy
it.
Organization.
All of it. I truly admire it. And I kind of want, like, I would like to be there if it ever got right. I just don't ever think it's going to get right, but is it possible, maybe, just maybe, that they made the right decision when they fired Fizdale?
Okay, I know they've won a couple games since letting Fizdale go, but I still don't think so. Like, I'm a big Fizdale guy, and I don't know when they brought him in, how much of it was the actual coaching, how much was it because he's so well-regarded around the league that they thought it would help bring in or lure free agents. I'm sure that had something to do with it. But I was sold on Fizdale. You know, he was the Pat Riley guy down in Miami. He had the quick stint there in Memphis. We'll take that for data. But I thought that Fizdale, with the confidence that he has and the moxie, that he can handle New York. And I thought he did. But I will acknowledge that some of the substitution patterns that he had this year were a bit questioning. And looking at Kevin Knox and how much he's regressed, that was alarming. So there were questions there, but I still thought that in the long run, he was going to be the guy. So now, as it is every year with the Knicks, it's another, we'll start over. And we'll hit the reset button. And you're tired of hitting the reset button. How many times are we going to have to pull the Nintendo cartridge out and blow it and keep hitting reset before the game can work?
But now, to be fair, this team was built to be reset, right? I just thought they should have been better this year than they have been. But they signed a bunch of dudes that they weren't necessarily going to have to keep after the season.
And that's why I don't have a problem. Like, it was a bunch of dudes where a lot of overlapping there with roster spots and positions. But to your point, they didn't sign these guys to long-term deals, which they had in the past. So at least they leave themselves a little wiggle room in the future if they want to trade some of them this year or just not bring them back. A lot of contracts with team options. So they didn't hold themselves. They didn't buy themselves to these guys. And RJ Barrett is showing signs. Yes, he's a young player and he's going to be up and down, but at least he's showing signs. The jump shot's going to have to improve. Absolutely. But at least he has a feel for the game and he doesn't look overwhelmed by what's going on out there on the court.
Yo, man, my thing is, if they're going to be this sorry, they got to stop charging so much for tickets. Like, whenever I see people put up on Instagram that they went to the Knicks game, right, I'm like, damn, where you work? Because I'd be Googling up, looking up them tickets on the apps. I'd be like, damn, y'all got some nerve to be charging this much to watch the Knicks.
And that's the thing. As bad as they are and as bad as they have been and as expensive as the tickets, people still come. Like that has to say a lot about the brand. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just how crazy New Yorkers and Knicks fans are that they hold out hope that one day they can turn it around. But as bad as this organization has been for the better part of 20 years almost now, people still come. The frustrating thing about the Knicks, there's no quick fix. And I know there have been the rumors and the talks how much the Knicks want to go after Masai Ujiri, the president there with Toronto. I want the Knicks and Knicks fans to stop hoping for a savior. You don't need the one savior. Whether it's a guy on the court or an executive, put pieces together and run your organization like a professional organization and sit back and ask yourself, whatever we're doing, would the Golden State Warriors or a team like that do it? If your answer is no or I don't know, then don't do it.
I understand the idea, and I think you're right, that like they don't need a savior to get this done. I just can understand why it is that people would think that only Jesus could fix it. You know, I can see how people start from the initial position and they just be like, nah, we need something bigger than this.
Like each year, every team has this motto, this thing that they advertise. So 2020 New York Knicks, fix it, Jesus.
Yes. Come on.
But it's not like it's not going to be a quick fix. It's not going to be this one thing. It has to be a series of moves. And I thought they were heading in that right direction last year. Yes, when Fizdale came aboard, Porzingis was hurt, so he didn't get a chance to coach him. But at least last year, you played your young guys, and young guys got reps and showed improvement, like something you can build towards. And then I thought this year, yeah, you signed some vets, but I thought that the young players would still get more time this year. Like, yeah, if you're going to build towards improving your team for the long haul, play your young guys. If you were going to bring these vets in to try to make a run, maybe at the eighth seed, okay. But when we realized that that wasn't going to happen, you should start playing these young guys and try to move some of these vets. And that's just not happening. So where are the Knicks? Yes, Morris and those guys are putting up numbers, but you're still one of the worst teams in the league. So where are you? What are you doing?
Before we go, something just dawned on me. You know, we're coming up on the Crimson season. You know, Crimson basketball is coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Yo, league really rolled snake eyes on some of these Christmas games.
Ooh, that Rockets-Warriors game. Ooh.
That Rockets-Warriors game in New Orleans supposed to be playing.
Yeah, the Pelicans and who is it? The Pelicans and Nuggets? Or is it Pelican Trailblazers or someone like
whoever
that?
Whoever it is, yo, man, the Warriors and the Pelicans are out here messing with the church money.
But even with that, we still get Lakers, Clippers.
We do get Lakers,
Clippers. Primetime game. Like, that's the one. Like, if you're looking for one, like, that's the one. Some of these other games, they'll be on in the background, and you can tune in to ESPN radio, listening to some of those games.
Well,
we get Clippers, Lakers. Like, that's what the people want, and they're giving us that in primetime.
Yo, so I keep teasing this point out, because I know we running short on time. They're going to kick us out soon. But when do you think people are going to realize that Kawhi Leonard is low-key having his worst season in years?
That doesn't matter. People, it doesn't matter. Because, one, like Kawhi and his personality, although, yeah, he's coming off the championship in Toronto, like, because he doesn't have this big, bombastic personality, people don't care.
Yeah.
People, like, if this was LeBron and having one of those type of years, people would watch. But because it's Kawhi, they don't care.
I think the day is going to come where we look back and we say, yo, Kawhi really should have signed a 4-year contract instead of a 2-year contract.
Yeah, probably.
I think there's something physically, it's fair to wonder if there's something really physically wrong with him.
Right, because a lot of the conversation this year has been the load management, and I think that's going to be cool. That's who Kawhi is for the rest of his career now. Like, that's going to be a bigger part. You're not going to get 82 regular season games out of him. You have to be smart about how you manage his minutes and gear up for a long playoff run. I think he led the league in minutes played during the finals run last year.
But he was laboring.
Yeah, he absolutely was. But the thought is, with now that you have Paul George, that he's not going to have to carry as much as a load as he did last year in Toronto. So I think they're really just resting him up for the playoff run.
Except they don't have a playmaker. Like, Kawhi is got more rebounds and more assists than he's ever had in his career. And his shooting percentages are way down. He's not getting to the rim. Like, I don't think this is low management. They keep talking about knee maintenance. Like, go, and in fact, this is what I tell you. Go look at, like, the counting numbers and the advanced numbers from that 2019 postseason run, and then compare it to the 2017 postseason run. The 2017 player is a much better one than the 2019 one was, and it may be the case that at the end of the 2020 postseason run that we're looking at the 2019 one and saying, wow, that was a better player than the 2021. Like, there's levels to this that I think that people are missing. At the same time, Patrick Beverley picking up the ball up top with Kawhi and Paul George on the wings, I won't play.
Right. It's still a thing. And Mo Harkless is a very capable defender, and we know Montrezl Harrell can get after it. Like, it's still, come playoff time when you put the clamps on, this is still very much a dangerous team. But to your point, they may not be able to rely on Kawhi as much, but that's why you brought in a Paul George.
Hold on. Playoff P?
Oh.
Like, let's not forget that. We put in a lot of faith in playoff
Pete. If the Clippers, you had to, though. Like, you had to make this play. Like, you're not, if you had the opportunity to bring in Paul George, even with the questions of him in the playoffs, you can't turn down an opportunity to bring in a player like that if you're the Clippers.
Right.
Like what would have been the alternative? Not to mention, that may have sealed your fate in getting Kawhi. So if it meant bringing in Paul George questions or whatever, if that meant getting Kawhi, if you're the Clippers, you had to do it. Like, this whole Clipper thing and the new branding and the future arena, like, they had to make this move.
Yo, one of the Clippers with them black and white uniforms they got, the city ones.
Yeah.
How come they ain't worked out no deal yet with Cortez Nikes? What they call Cortez Nikes where you from? We call them gangster Nikes in Houston.
I mean, Cortez.
Like, oh, y'all, they call them the dope man?
Just Cortez. Okay. Like, you recognize what they were.
Yeah, in L.A., they the dope man Nikes. In Houston, they the gangster Nikes. That's why I wasn't sure if everybody, you know, what their different names was. Like, for the longest, I was like, I don't know what the Cortez is. And somebody's like, oh, yeah, you know, the gangster Nikes. I was like, oh, gangster Nikes.
Look, and for some out there, because we don't want to exclude, for some of the audience, those are the Forrest Gump Nikes as well.
Oh, that's right. Yes. He was wearing some gangster Nike.
Absolutely.
I had not thought about the term gangster Nike.
We're inclusive here. For some, it's the gangster Nikes, and for some, it's the Cortez, and for others, it's the Forrest Gump.
I had not thought about gangster Nikes in like 20 years before
now. It's funny that you mentioned that, because Kevin Durant goes hard with those, too. Like, he wears the Cortez to almost every game.
Yo, I need to see
that.
That's
his look.
I can't imagine how long his feet look in some gangster Nikes.
Look, there might be hope for you after all, Bo. Get yourself some Cortez now, man. If KD can pull it off for the tall, skinny guys.
That is true. The thing about the gangster Nikes, though, I always feel like unless you're wearing a white t-shirt, you shouldn't be wearing gangster Nikes.
That too. Right.
The crispest white t-shirt.
Right. You got a white the shorts with the socks pulled up or something like that, or maybe some khakis, maybe, but like, there's rules to this. You can't just be out here in bootcut jeans and some Cortez. That's not going
to
work.
No, then I moved to California. And when I was there, anytime I see some gangster Nikes, and they told me they were the dope man Nikes. So now when I see some gangster Nikes, I just hear somebody like, somebody go inside and make some Kool-Aid.
And it all adds up, too.
Yeah. Like, yo, you that's Brazy, fool. That's Brazy. You know what? Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. Shannon Penn, my man.
Yes, sir.
I hope 2019 was a winner for you outside of your terrible sports franchise.
2020 got to be better. It's coming.
I need it so bad.
It can't get any worse.
Yo, 2020, it matters so much.
If we talk about saviors all the time, 2020 is going to be my motto. Fix it, Jesus.
Yo, 2020, the year to fear is already here. That is where we are. Think about everybody, everything in your life. Think about how important 2020 is.
Like, on everything. Much is riding on 2020.
Right. There's nobody who doesn't have high stakes for 2020. I don't know a single human for whom 2020 can't just flip everything up. Whew. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this a couple times a week. Shannon Penn, thank you. My man Gabe Bassett handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Be sure to check out the Bill Barnwell Show. This week he chats with Shale Kapadia of The Athletic and ESPN Vikings reporter Courtney Cronin. Be sure to subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in 2020. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear. More driven.